Well, already, gang, welcome back to the Active Self-Protection Podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Bolivar, and I remain, with any luck at all, your favorite former Fed. With us today is a new friend of mine. His name is Alex Carrillo. He is in the Denver, Colorado area, and he is single with he's not single. Oh, man, I almost said it. No, he has a girlfriend and no kids. Sorry, didn't mean to get you in trouble. Alex, how are you, sir?
Good. Just had a little bit of internet lag here, but hopefully so far so good.
No, that's fine. We have a cool system, so if it locks up or whatever, don't worry about it. We can fix it in post. Not a big deal. So
sweet.
So you're how old?
I'm 25. Just turned 25 on December 11th. So a couple weeks ago.
Oh, well, happy birthday from me and all of our listeners and viewers. Very nice. So your story happened about how long ago?
It was a little over a year ago.
Okay. And this happened where? Was this at a house you were living in, your parents' house?
Yeah. So it was going to be at my parents' house on September 25th.
Okay. Of last year, 22?
Yep.
All right. So not to spoil anything ahead of time, but this incident involves your use of a firearm in defense of yourself. Mm-hmm. Some people will maybe complain that it was in defense of property, but you're well within your rights to do what you did. And I would definitely say the firearms use was in defense of life and not property because, we'll find out why exactly. So is your family particularly Second Amendment firearms, self-defense oriented? Because you did have a firearm available when this happened.
So I would say yes and no. So my parents had a gun growing up for defensive use. It was a shotgun. And, as a kid growing up in Colorado, I went bird hunting, but we were never really the type of family to like, oh, hey, let's go shooting this weekend. And right. I kind of grew up as a little bit of a gun enthusiast. And so as I got older, I kind of became that person of, hey, let's go shooting this weekend. So, I had a couple of guns with me.
Very good. So what was your, aside from the family shotgun, what was your first firearm purchase, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, my first firearm purchase that I ever got, I was probably around 12 years old.
It
was
a Benelli. That's fine. We kind of want embarrassed. But never mind. You got ahead of me. No, it sounds like it wasn't embarrassing. Go ahead. What was it?
No, it was good. It was a Benelli Supernova, 12-gauge Supernova. And it had Max 4 camo. Yeah, super nice gun. It's still my go-to duck hunting gun to this day. But then after I became an adult, once I turned 18, my first own purchase was Henry 22 Golden Boy.
Nice. Was that lever action?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I know a friend of mine, Logan, will approve of the lever action purchase. That is the most American thing on the planet is a Henry lever action rifle. So let me ask you, you are a denizen of the Colorado area. May I assume you've heard of or seen the show South Park?
Oh, yes, of course.
When duck hunting, did you feel the need to exclaim, they're coming right for us before you pull the trigger?
Oh, absolutely.
You said it once. You had to have said it once, right? He's coming right for us. Okay. If you haven't seen South Park, I apologize for the arcane South Park reference. So you are the guy in your family that is sort of the self-defense firearms guy. And sometimes the whole family joins in on that affair. Other times you're just the outlier that's interested in that sort of thing. Did your family sort of support that in you? Or does anybody ever comment or complain or compliment you on that sort of mindset?
Oh yeah. My mom, not a fan. She's not a fan of the guns. Every time I tell her I'm getting a new gun, she's like, do you really need a new gun? And I'm like, yes, mom, I do. I absolutely do need a new gun. My dad, he's the complete antithesis. He loves me and my gun hobby. He loves helping me figure out how to do stuff with my guns, and he loves going out shooting with me. So yeah, it's a great yin and yang for sure.
We'll never forget your mom. When the next time she says, I got a new purse or I got a new pair of shoes, you need to ask her that question and turn the tables on her a little bit.
Exactly.
Mom, do you need that pair of shoes? Are you out of shoes? That's what I ask my wife sometimes. Like, are you out of shoes? I don't understand. I've seen your closet. There's a ton of them. Mm-hmm. All right. So the incident at hand happened September of last year, and it was at your parents' house. Were you living there at the time?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And it looks like it happened late at night. We do have a Ring Cam video, and we are, again, don't get mad if it doesn't come out on the same day. We're going to endeavor to have John break down the video over on the main channel. So hopefully we can get these scheduled at the same time. If not, look for it. It'll be up on the main channel at some point, I'm sure. So this happened late at night, it looks like, or early in the morning. So kind of walk us through where you were in the house. Were you asleep? Were you awake? What were you doing? And what alerted you to the possibility there was thievery and criminality afoot?
Yeah, absolutely. So me and my girlfriend had just gotten back from a party at around midnight. And this all went down at around 2:30. And so we came back at around midnight, decided to take a shower. And by the time we got done with all that, it's about 1 a.m. And we were laying in bed, just watching The Sopranos, you know, hanging out. And my bedroom, from the footage you've seen, is right above where the truck was. So I heard the truck start up. And as soon as we heard, because, you know, it's a Ram 1500, big old V8 engine. As soon as we heard that V8 come on, we're like, oh, that's not right. And my parents were out of town for vacation, forgot to add that. So we were the only two who were supposed to be in the house. And so hearing that truck start up, we're like, uh-oh. And so we get up, we look out the window, and immediately upon looking out the window, we see in the cul-de-sac, there's a white car. And that's another red flag. The white car was on. Usually nobody's out there at 2 a.m. And on top of that, there's a gentleman inside of the truck trying to maneuver the truck and, you know, get it out of where it was parked between like two other cars. And those were the immediate red flags that really set me off.
So I'm just going to, the audience right now is screaming, don't call that guy a gentleman. He's a scumbag. But you're a nice young lad. That's the kind of language that you use. You were raised right. Mm-hmm. So there is, play devil's advocate, there is no way this was an authorized user of that truck. There is zero chance that your dad promised his buddy Lenny from the shop that he could borrow it and, by the way, pick it up in the dark at 1 a.m.
No way. And both my parents, like I said, were on vacation, on their way back home. Like, they were flying back, like in the process of flying back. And so I knew for a fact it couldn't have been them. And my sister was staying in some... she was like watching a friend's cat or something. So staying at a house downtown. So it wasn't her. And yeah, those were the immediate red flags for us.
Right. Yeah. And we talked about this prior to starting and hitting the record button, but the temerity of people to just help themselves to other people's stuff. I should be used to it after 30 years in LA. I should be used to it and it shouldn't bother me, but it still bothers me. And to walk into someone's driveway at 1 a.m. and just like to help yourself to their vehicle is insane. So I've seen the video. And in the video, it looks like there's a male and a female. Looks at the female half, who, if I'm not mistaken, was wearing a Yale hoodie, which is hilarious. Yeah. I don't think she went to Yale.
Not at all.
And in the video, it looks like she's the one that kind of walks up and starts checking door handles. And the last vehicle she checked was the truck, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So it was unlocked, or did she have something to defeat the lock mechanism?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I wanted to bring up, you know, being here on the podcast is prevention. And like the biggest mistake that I made that night was leaving the keys in the truck. And one of the things about these newer vehicles is you don't need to have the key in the ignition to start the car. It just needs to be physically inside the vehicle. And, you know, with my parents being out of town, like I said, I was playing, you know, musical cars all week long, trying to, you know, move different cars. So I could take my car out, do whatever. And I had just forgotten to, you know, take the keys out. And such a big mistake on my part, honestly.
Well, in your defense, the car, I mean, this guy had to do a 37-point turn to get out of there. It was pretty well blocked in. So I can't imagine. I'm sure, was that in the back of your head? Like, oh, it's blocked in, it should be fine. Or did you just literally just forget the keys?
Literally just forgot the keys. And, you know, I shouldn't say this, but... it's not the first time I've done that. And like, my parents have given
the last time.
Oh, definitely the last time. Yeah, definitely the last time. But, like I said, those cars, it's such a ridiculous thing to just have it in the car and like, oh, yep, that'll start the car. But
right.
It's easy for them.
I don't know what ever happened to, putting a key into a cylinder and turning it as being just a fine way to start a car. I literally, we have two cars. My wife and I kind of swap back and forth frequently. And one of them is push to start. And the other one is an older convertible that has a key. And I never think to myself as I'm reaching for the ignition cylinder, man, this is a huge pain. I wish I could just press a button instead. No, I've never. And I feel like the press to start is one more potential point of failure in a vehicle down the road that's going to cost you $8,000 to get it fixed. But I digress. So you hear the vehicle start up. You and your girlfriend are still awake. Oh, no. Do you acknowledge this? Do you say anything before you leap into action, or do you just go?
Uh-oh, I think I might have disconnected there for a second. Sorry, what'd you say?
No worries. No, it's fine. When this goes on, you hear the engine start, the rumble of a powerful Detroit V8, and you guys are laying there, you hear it. Do you guys say anything to each other, or do you just jump into action?
So immediately, my girlfriend's the one who was like, they're stealing the truck. So she's like, they're stealing the truck. And I just instantly went into action, grabbed my Kimber, and just ran down the stairs.
Okay, the people want to know the exact make, model, and caliber of the Kimber. I can't just leave it at Kimber.
Yeah, it was Kimber 1911 45 ACP, the exact model. I don't know off the top of my head, but it was a beautiful gun. It had a nice black and sort of like grayish grip on it. But yeah, I miss it every day.
Right. Yeah, we'll talk about whether or not it became evidence later on and you never got it back. But that's a frequent running theme on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
So you grab the Kimber, you run downstairs. Are you fully dressed? Are you in your chonies? Are you wearing jammy pants? Or what are you? Oh, don't tell me you were naked.
Almost. I was in my underwear. Okay. I was in my underwear and I was wearing a long sleeve T-shirt. It's like one of my blue shirts with like a little stripe on it. And like, I can never forget that shirt now. Every time I wear it, I'm like, oh, yep, that's the shirt.
Yeah, this is my shooting shirt, evidently.
Exactly. Shooting shirt. Yep.
And again, I'm spoiling a little bit of the story. But so you come to the front door, you walk out. It's hard to tell from the video. Paint a picture for the folks listening and watching. As you're walking out the door, it looks kind of like there is a long wall to your left before you get to the driveway. Is that right?
Yeah.
So you have to walk down this open area. You can't see what's going on in the driveway just yet. What's going through your head in that moment?
Well, what's going through my head is, you know, I'm thinking about the other times similar situations have kind of unfolded at my neighborhood. And like, you know, it's not unusual that there'd be people like trying to get into car doors. And like before, you know, I've just yelled at them like, hey, hey. But having someone like physically in the car was like another element of stress that was like so unusual. And so right. As soon as I was out there, I was like, not really sure what to expect. But, you know, now looking back at it, I realized like, oh, my God, I ran like way out into the open and really put myself in a lot of risk.
Yeah. And again, you know, the point of this show, the point of the main channel videos, the badge cams, all of that is rarely really to assign blame. It's very infrequent that we're like, this guy just completely screwed up. So the idea is that people listening to this are going to get a mental rep, and everyone's going to get something a little bit different out of hearing your story. You know, I guarantee you there's people who are like, should have just let them take it, call the police and not get out there. There's an argument to be made for that. And John and I disagree sometimes on exactly how to respond to a property crime. But the fact is you're 100% within your rights to go out there and try to prevent them from stealing one of the most expensive things your family owns, a motor vehicle.
Right.
We'll go into it later, but you know, the reason for you ending up pulling the trigger in my estimate was self-defense and not protection of property. So 100%. You come around the corner. Are you aware as you're coming around that corner to face whatever you're going to face, if there's more than one person, that there's two criminals out there?
Right. So I knew just from looking through the window that there was two people out there. I knew one of them was in the truck. And so my immediate focus was on the person who wasn't in the truck, which was the woman. And that was pretty much what I was zoned in on.
Okay. You definitely don't know these people. They're not, no one's playing a prank. These are strangers.
No. Yeah. Okay. Complete strangers.
So you come around the corner. I hear in the video, I heard you give some verbal commands. You were yelling at him. What were you saying?
I was screaming, hey, hey, just trying to get their attention.
Right. Did the individual in the truck, the male half, did he seem to notice you right away?
No, he seemed like he was more focused on just trying to get the truck out of there.
Yeah. He's doing his 37 point turn.
That was
So he's starting to back out. By the time this goes down, he's almost got the truck extricated from the spot, but not quite. So you see the female, tell us in your own words what happened in that moment.
Yeah. So as soon as I walked out there, you know, I look and I see the female and I saw her like turn around and sort of reach into her car. And I've seen, you know, a million videos of, you know, body cam, whatever, people doing that. And when they turn around and have something in their hands, that's like immediately what I was looking for. And sure enough, she turned around and had a gun in her hands and she pointed it at me. And as soon as she pointed the gun at me, I was like, oh shit. So yeah. At that point, pardon my language, but at that point, I pointed my gun at her and I immediately started putting shots towards her, backpedaling. Cause like I said earlier, I was way too far out in the open. And my mind kind of thought, oh crap, there's the other guy too. Like, what if he also has a gun? So backpedaled, got cover, and then just tried to reassess.
So there's your first mental rep, folks. There's your first lesson. And again, not criticizing Alex in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, as a police officer, if you're approaching a home with an unknown issue inside, on your way to the door of the apartment, the house, the townhouse, whatever, the business, could be wherever you end up going. On your way, you're trained, most people train to look for spots of cover that you can retreat to if you absolutely have to. If shots start ringing out through the door from the upstairs window. So if this is you and you're running, especially if you're running outside your home to address a problem or a threat, you know, if you think of it, remember to look for sources of cover, big, big, thick stuff like an oak tree or even a fire plug or a mailbox or whatever is around that you think will stop around. Save that. If you can find some concealment, that's the next best thing, which concealment being defined as something that will block the people's view of you, but not stop a round of ammunition, not stop a bullet, basically. So you start putting shots down range. Spoiler alert, do you hit the female half at any point with a round?
No idea. Yeah, no clue. Yeah.
And we find out later the male half was injured. Do we know if he was actually shot?
Again, no clue. Still don't know from the police, but blood in the car, so I'd assume so.
So if he began to make his exit rather hastily as she got back in her car to run away. Mm-hmm. They had a minor collision. I don't think that would have made him bleed, though, judging from what I saw on the tape.
No.
So who knows? But if somebody shows up with a gunshot wound at a hospital, everyone knows this from TV and the movies, they're mandatory reporting to call the police and report a gunshot wound. So who knows? At any point during this whole thing, did you think, oh, I've shot someone now? Did that occur to you or you just didn't know?
Yeah, immediately after it happened, it all felt very unreal. I was like, oh wow, no way. And I think the shocking things like that really stood out to me after the gunfight were how quick you go through ammo and just kind of the shock of like not really knowing what's going on. Like I wasn't like really scared. I was kind of just more like, oh crap, like what if they come back? And yeah, I think those were the two major things that stood out to me. And one thing that someone told me or that I read online is that it's like feeling every negative emotion you've ever felt all at once. And that's very pretty accurate.
I like the way you phrase that.
Yeah.
Do we know how many rounds the female, the male half didn't shoot at all, I don't think, right? Or we don't think he did.
No. And the female, I believe only one round, but I could be wrong. Again, I don't know because the case is still technically open and I haven't gotten that information from the police.
And how many, do we know how many rounds she fired?
No. Yeah.
Okay. Well, she definitely fired at least a round, right?
Yeah, she definitely fired a round. And like I said earlier, if you slow down the footage, you can actually see like her holding her gun towards the ground. And it's like immediately after my first shot, like she kind of lowers her gun, shoots the ground, and you can see it spark off the driveway. And every time I go to my parents' house, if I take my buddies there to have a drink or whatever, always point it out. I'm like, hey, look at that mark on the driveway. That's where that lady shot the ground. And they're like, wow, that's crazy.
I don't know. I'm a retired investigator. So my investigative brain is always kind of going when I talk about stuff like this. She mm-hmm. was wearing that Yale hoodie. Has any investigators checked the Yale yearbooks perhaps to find a picture of her? Is that a possibility?
No, there's no way she went to Yale.
That's a joke, folks. I just think it's hilarious that, you know, someone wearing an Ivy League, we talk about not catching the smart ones. So maybe she didn't go to Yale. Maybe she is one of the smart ones and they found a way to completely get away with this heinous crime. I hate the fact that they haven't been caught, but
that
could mean a lot of things. We had more than one case where we were looking for someone we had identified and I remember going to someone's door with my partner, Mike Haynes, who doesn't mind me saying his last name. And, you know, we're like, hey, we're here looking for a junior spaceman. Is he around? And the mom just started crying. And we're like, is everything okay? And she allowed us to come in to see the memorial to him, the shrine they had to him in their living room. And we kind of looked at our shoes awkwardly and left. We did verify that wasn't a put on, by the way, in case you're wondering. We did make sure he actually had passed away. He stepped in front of a bus in Tijuana. Ooh. What are you going to do? Yeah, I know, right? Yes, the world mourned his loss for 7 days afterwards. Anyway, so at some point you have to call the police. I assume had your girlfriend already called 911 to tell him what's going on or not yet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I kind of left that out earlier, but as soon as, you know, she said they're stealing the car, the other thing I said to her in response was call the police. Mm-hmm. So she had been on the phone with the police the whole time. And man, I'm sure there's a way to do it. But during the 911 call, my girlfriend's on the phone there the whole time. And she's like narrating what's happening. And she's like, now they're shooting at each other. And so, yeah, pretty traumatic experience for her too, because all she heard was the gunshots and she couldn't really see me from like where I was standing. So she was thinking that I got shot.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the police, how I assume with her narrating this action and probably them hearing shots over the 911 call, mm-hmm. I assume they got there relatively quickly.
Nope. Took them about 15, maybe 20 minutes.
All right. So we're not going to name the department, but I don't know what else they had going on that was, I mean, maybe they were just, they had that many priority calls that were that serious. They couldn't show up when they did, but I doubt it. When they did show up, another possibility is, you know, they staged a little bit around the corner to get their ducks in a row or whatever, but I don't love that either, frankly, in this situation. When they did show up, what was their sort of demeanor? Did anyone talk to you on dispatch, say, hey, put the gun away or put it down or whatever, anything like that?
Yeah. You know, thankfully I watch you guys a lot on YouTube. So I knew immediately first thing, gun goes away. And, I told, you know, the dispatcher and I told my girlfriend, my gun's away and it's in a safe location. And, the police were all super, cool. They were all super nice with me. And, you know, nobody passed any judgment onto me or I didn't feel like anybody showed up and was rude to me. But yeah, I pretty much gave them the whole grand tour of, you know, my house, and I took them up to my room and they asked to see what bullets I was shooting and all that fun stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I won't belabor the point about whether or not to talk to the police. It's something we've covered, I think, as much as it needs to be covered. So you got a sense of where their head was at and you did what you thought was correct in the moment. So we will, we'll leave that there. At some point I assume detectives showed up to talk to you about this. Was it that night or did they call you into their office the next day or the next week?
No, I never really spoke one-on-one with the detective assigned to my case. I really just spoke to the investigators that night. For me, kind of the way the whole situation has gone down still to this present day was like everything went down. I talked with the police that night, gave them the video. And then they said, okay, we'll be in touch, and never heard anything. And then about a year later, I reached out. I sent multiple emails, multiple phone calls to the detective assigned to my case, you know, just trying to get an update, and never heard anything back from her. So then I finally reached out to her sergeant, and he was able to get me in touch with her. She gave me a call back, and she was letting me know that in September of this year, or maybe the following month, whichever, they were planning on getting a warrant out for one of the suspects, but she didn't specify which one, and that she'd give me a phone call in about a month or so, you know, just to let me know what was going on. And I never have gotten that phone call. So I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to let them do their thing and try not to rush anything. But still from like the victim side, it definitely sucks because you don't get the closure that you want.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to pass judgment on a situation I don't have all of, you know, 100% information on. I just have your, you know, your perspective of it. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt anything you're saying to me, but that doesn't sound right to me at all. As an investigator, even if I had nothing, I would be checking in with you at least periodically to let you know, hey, we're working this, we're working that, you know, we'll let you know when something comes up. But just as a victim of crime, I think it's important that the police, you know, give you any update they can possibly, if there's no update, I'll tell you, hey, there's no update. We got nothing or whatever, whatever it is. Just to give you the sense that you're part of that process, because that being part of the investigation process frequently for a victim is cathartic. It is a way to help kind of get a little bit of closure, even if there isn't a closure on the case per se.
Right.
Just being part of that process and being allowed into that in whatever way that it's possible kind of helps with some of the aftermath of some of this sort of thing. So speaking of aftermath, I haven't asked this in a while. I don't know why, but I've sort of backed off on asking the PTSD related questions. But may I inquire, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. May I inquire, has there been any manifestation of that sort of thing? Any anxiety or dreams or over, what's the word I'm looking for? Over hypervigilance, I meant to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this is one of those important things of being brutally honest, especially because this is, you know, public. And I think there's a lot of people who are similar to me who aren't like necessarily like former military or, you know, police or any of that. And, you know, you get put in these situations. And for me, the hypervigilance definitely still there. You know what I mean? Like I'll hear something, I'm like, oh crap, what's going on? But what really helps is just having your family to fall back on and a good therapist, really. And just being open with what you're thinking about.
Did the police department offer you any kind of victim assistance? Yeah. They did. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good job by them, in your opinion?
Perfect job. Love my therapist. She's great.
Okay. Oh, so they connected you with the therapist?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very good. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Are we very good? So, you know, there's a ton of different ways that post-traumatic stress can manifest itself. And I always like to tell people, look, there's no right or wrong way as a, you know, as a victim, or, you know, you weren't really much of a victim. You fought back. I'm careful with that word, but for lack of a better term, for the victim of a traumatic event or someone who just witnessed something traumatic or wasn't even involved,
mm-hmm.
PTSD can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. And like I said, there's no right or wrong way to react to it. You do need to get help if you're having a problem.
Absolutely.
But many people, you know, just don't have any response at all. And that's okay too. There's, like I said, there's no right or wrong way. So rest easy if you're listening to this or watching this and you've been through something and, you know, you just had a couple Cheetos and went to bed and that was that. That's okay too. Moving forward, you didn't live at the house at the time, right? You were just watching it for him?
No, so I did live at the house. Yeah. Okay. At that time I lived at the house. But now I live in my apartment. I've been here for past 6 months.
Nice. The first apartment, man, my wife, our youngest son's actually getting his first place here in Tucson. And it reminds me and my wife of our first place and how exciting that was to, you know, strike out on your own. That's a really cool, fun part of your life. So enjoy it.
Oh yeah.
You're living the glory days right now, Alex. There is one thing I wanted to mention before we part ways. And that is your last name is Carrillo, a traditional Mexican name, which means probably, go on a limb here, your dad is of Mexican descent, and being of Mexican descent, he did not appreciate that his recovered truck had blood all over it. So talk to us about what happened with that.
Oh yeah. So after, you know, the whole ordeal, the truck was recovered and got it back in a couple of days after they processed it for evidence and all that fun stuff. And my dad took me to the garage and he got a big old bucket full of soap and water and gave me some rags and said, put on two pairs of gloves and make sure you don't leave any blood in there. And so then I had to start scrubbing down the leather seats and underneath the seats and just being a good son overall.
Was it a horror movie in there or what?
Not really. You know, like it wasn't too bad, but like it definitely didn't look healthy. That's for sure.
So was there any indication from the interior of the vehicle that a round had passed through it? Was there a bullet hole anywhere? Was the window open? Is there a way that possibly that he was shot, or we just don't know?
Yeah. So, I mean, there were bullet holes through the windshield, but no bullet holes in the interior of the truck. And then there's another bullet hole like near the fender, but everything else went through the windshield. Or sorry, not the windshield, the window, side window.
Okay. So the last thing, I have to address this. I'm not trying to ambush you at all, I promise. So near the end of the tape, it sounds like a couple of rounds go off as they're fleeing. So talk to us about that. Because I know I'm going to get comments. We're going to get questions.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, I mean, kind of just was more in fear of my life after the whole thing. Because in that situation, if one person had a gun, my assumption was the other person likely has a gun.
Sure.
And after seeing me shoot at his girlfriend, I don't know what his reaction is, especially given that he's behind the wheel of a 2.5-ton truck. I don't know if he's going to use it as a weapon against me or if he's going to shoot me through the window. So I just made the safe bet and, you know, tried to protect myself in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, you'd been shot at. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I once said of someone in a video that I wasn't particularly concerned about their injuries. And that holds true for this guy as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to invoke the name of Mike Haynes one more time. Mike Haynes was kind of my unofficial training officer with the feds for one of the units that I went to. And what he said to me, we left a house and I'm scratching my head going, what is going on in there? Who are these people and why do they live this way? And Mike said, you know, check your worldview at the door. You're never going to understand their behavior. And I think because you are raised by good parents and are a good person.
Thank you.
You, it's quaint to me that you think he cared whether or not that woman was shot. Cause I promise you, he didn't care at all. In fact, he did. Right. He took the coward's way out and just ran away as you were shooting his girlfriend. I doubt he holds the car door for her is what I'm getting at.
Not a gentleman.
I don't think he puts his hoodie down over a puddle so she doesn't have to get her feet wet.
Right.
Anyway, Alex, this has been fantastic. I don't want to leave anything out. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss or mention that we forgot to cover?
I think pretty much covered it all. Yeah.
Okay. So, and right now these people are still outstanding. I mean, look, for all we know, and I'm not making a joke here, for all we know, they're both dead. For all we know, they crawled out of that car into a gutter somewhere and passed away and they'll never get caught. But right now they're definitely not caught. And you said, what struck me as odd is you said they might have a suspect or they were going to think about getting a warrant for someone, but you never
followed
up on it. So you don't even know what's going on.
Yeah. You know, it's very unclear the status of the case just based off what I've heard from the police. So I'm just kind of, you know, crossing my fingers and hoping something good comes up one day. But other than that, you know, it is what it is.
Fair enough. So, and I guess the question I meant to ask earlier and forgot was at no point, because if you were possibly a suspect, meaning they thought you'd done something criminally wrong, this would be an interminably long, awful period of time where you're wondering if you're going to get charged with a crime. But I take it from your demeanor, at no point did anyone give you the impression that was even a remote possibility?
No. Yeah, no. Every lawyer I've spoken to kind of has said, nah, you're good.
Good to know. I can't thank you enough for reaching out, Alex, for sharing your story. It takes a lot of nerve to come on and talk about this sort of thing in front of thousands and thousands of people. But here we are. Great job. And Alex Carrillo, thank you so much.
Thank you.